Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. It's all creative. Yes, it is. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, a free writing magazine on the internet, articles on writing. You know, you have to write a bit of the business of writing, but also on the writing life, just what it means to be a writer. What it means to get up and face the blank page. You get articles every month. Of course, my tri-weekly blog. Also put that up there where I write about anything having to do with the creative life at all. Anything at all. It's all there. But I also do video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres, all kind. Right now, my interview with the one and only Donald Moss, literary agent, but also author of writing the breakout novel, The Emotional Craft of Fiction, Fire in Fiction. Don has a lot to say about the publishing world, about the business of publishing, about marketing of fiction, and also just what makes fiction awesome and what doesn't. And well, anyway, he's an interesting guy. He's thought a lot about writing and books and fiction, and it's a conversation right now on Author Magazine. So go check it out at authormagazine.org. We're also funded by the fabulous Pacific Northwest Writers Association. These good people have been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. So I mentioned last week, I'm going to mention it again. They're offering something now called the Leap of Faith because they have a conference every year. It's in September. It's a long way away, isn't it? But some of you, you already know you're going to that conference. You just know it. You just got it marked off on your calendar. If you're going to go, just take the Leap of Faith. Do it now. You get it for $100. I think you get $100 off the cost of the conference. That's a lot. Plus you get an extra pitch block. Yes, you do. Because if you know you're going to be there, we're going to have good agents. You know that. We're going to have good editors. You know that too. So if you're going to do it, if you know you want to go, just do it now. Get in right now. Take the leap of faith. Believe in yourself. That's right. That's the conference, PNWA.org. PNWA.org. You can learn all about it. Yes, indeedy, people. Well, anything going on with Bill? No, not really. It's quiet time. It's quiet time now. Just waiting. I've got some news. We're waiting. I don't know. I hope to be able to tell you something good. You know how it is with writers. If I do, if some good news comes down, I'll tell you guys all about it. But we're still waiting. We're in a waiting phase right now. That's all I'm going to say. It's probably more than I should have said, but that's what I'm going to say. Enough about me. Let's talk about Matt Coyle, today's guest. Matt is the author of the best-selling Rick Cahill crime novels. He knew he wanted to be a crime writer when he was only 14, and his father gave him The Simple Art of Murder by Raymond Chandler. Good place to start. His foray into crime fiction, however, was delayed for 30 years, as he spent managing a restaurant, selling golf clubs for various golf companies, and in national sales for a sports licensing company. Writing at night for over a decade, his debut novel, Yesterday's Echo, was finally published in 2013. The wait was almost worth it, as it won the Anthony Award for Best First Novel, the San Diego Book Award for Best Mystery, and the Ben Franklin Award for Best New Voice in Fiction. He has gone on to publish 5 other novels in the series, including the upcoming Lost Tomorrows, which will be coming out December 3rd. Mark that on your calendar. Oh, where are you? There you are, Matt. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to have you on. Congratulations. Book number 6 is going to be hitting the shelves soon. You got to be kind of excited about that, yeah?
Absolutely. I'm always excited. Always excited when I get your first box of books.
Has that happened yet?
A month or so before it comes out. Yeah, I got the first box, and looks pretty good. Yeah, I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, you like that. You like that smell when you open the box. That new book smell. It's like getting in a new car, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. And so here you are. You just got your books, your 6th book. But oh man, at one point in time. Well, let's see. Let's back up. I was going to say at one point in time it might have looked like this would never happen, but let's go back before that. Mm-hmm. So you're 14 years old, and your dad. Your dad gives you The Simple Art of Murder. What prompted him to give you that book of all things? Do you know?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if I ever asked him. But I'm sure glad he did. You know, he was I think he wanted to write too, but never did. And that, as a matter of fact, my great aunt was Mary Chase, who wrote Harvey, about the 6 foot invisible rabbit.
No way! Get out!
Yeah.
I heard a legend about her that she rewrote that thing about 45 times. Is that true?
I don't know about that, actually. Probably. I do know that, you know, she's Irish, like my dad. And so the only couple times that I met her, she seemed pretty happy. The Irish, they like the alcohol. So now I understand where the story may have come from about a 6 foot invisible rabbit.
Oh, that's a great story.
Doing some research on that, when somebody asked me something unusual, you know, an interview, they asked me something unusual about me, and it was a you know, when you get the questions ahead of time interview. So I just looked up. Of course, I knew that, but I looked it up, and she actually won the Pulitzer for that.
She did?
She won a Pulitzer. Yeah, about a Pulitzer in a play about a 6 foot invisible rabbit. So,
it was a play, wasn't it? Or was it a book?
It was a play first.
Right.
And then
it was Jimmy Stewart, more than a rabbit. Jimmy Stewart just was perfect. Well, that's so interesting because I love that movie. Love it. I love Jimmy Stewart. So, okay, so you got it in your blood. You got it in your blood a little bit. The Irish are storytellers. But The Simple Art of Murder, that's an interesting choice. It wasn't The Hobbit. Science fiction. No, it's The Simple Art. And it turns you on right away. You thought, there's something about this. What about it got your blood going?
I just think the, Chandler's The Knight, maybe not quite so shining, a knight in shining armor, but the man who lives by his own code trying to solve problems, that always appealed to me. And, of course, once I started getting into his novels, Philip Marlowe, it really made sense to me. When I was younger, I read Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. In fact, I'm looking at the book right now my brother gave me when I was, I don't know how old it was, maybe 10 or 12. It was an anthology of all of Doyle's stories. So I like, you know, they were all each about 7 or 8 pages, I think. So I also used to read Agatha Christie. So I think at that age, I like the idea, you know, they're pretty black and white. There's bad guy and then the good guy's going to solve the crime. So I liked that idea. And it was all a puzzle that could be fixed, you know, be told in a certain amount of pages. I like that idea. As I got older, I like the idea of maybe a slightly tarnished knight trying to solve crimes on his own terms. That's how Rick Taylor came about.
The interesting thing about crime fiction is it has the puzzle aspect to it, and it has the sort of, you know, you've got usually the crime novel has someone who's killed somebody else, and so you have a kind of clear villain in this one way. But it always struck me that crime fiction allows for the writer to delve in, if they want, into sort of human nature, into our psychology a little bit about, because I've always thought, and I'd be interested to hear your take on this, that mysteries or crime fiction are not usually really a whodunit as a whydunit. Would you say that? Like that it's the motivation is far more, is usually kind of more interesting than simply the fact that someone's murdered someone. Would you agree with that or not?
Yeah, I think so. I think that for me, the best crime's that way. And it's not just, it doesn't end with the why done it. It ends with the repercussions of after it's done, what it does to everybody involved, including the killer.
Right.
That's always appealed to me. You know, you got the family, people left behind. You have, obviously, the worst thing happening was the guy that was killed. But you have the police or some investigative agency trying to solve the crime, what they go through trying to solve it. And even the killer, how he or she is affected.
Right.
So.
Now, I know how I would be because I'm a little lazy in this regard. And if I were to write crime fiction, my research for it would be just to read a lot of crime fiction. But I know that most crime writers, they actually try to learn a bit about the world of police and detectives. And when you decided that, well, actually, let's say, when did you say to yourself, okay, I actually want to, I'm not, I actually want to try to be a novelist. You made that decision.
You know, the last question you asked me, I was completely broken up. I got an audio problem.
Well, I'll ask it again. I hope you can hear it this time. Do you remember how old you were when you said to yourself, this is what I want to do. I don't want to just think about being a novelist. That's what I want to do. Do you remember how old you were?
Pretty much. I was in college. I don't think I was completely thinking I was going to write crime only. I got out of college and thought, well, I have a degree in English.
Right.
I'm going to write the great American novel. And what I found, surprisingly, is that you have to eat. You have to make money to eat and drive your car and things. So, and I didn't realize at that point that you can write a novel and have a day job at the same time.
Right.
So I got out of college for a couple months. I thought I'd start to write some horribly angsty novel that hopefully I can never find. And
right.
But I always told people I was going to be a writer, even though I wasn't writing. I was in the restaurant business, kind of fell into that. I fell into the golf club business. And the whole time I'm telling people, yeah, I'm really a writer. But I wasn't even writing.
Really?
I lived with that guilt. I lived with that guilt for about 30 years. And then I was working for the fourth golf company I had helped put out of business in 10 years. And when I saw the handwriting on the wall, I knew this one was going down. I said, well, this is it. I think I was 42 or 3 at the time. I said, you either have to write the novel or you can't talk about it anymore.
Wow. Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So you're 42 and you said, come on, Matt, let's do it.
Yeah. And sure enough, the company went out of business. I had a little bit of money saved up, not much. So I took, I think it was about 5 months to write the first draft of many drafts that would eventually become Yesterday's Echo. And when I had it done, I thought, well, I didn't know much about the biz, but I knew I had to get an agent. And so I thought, well, I'll get the agent. She'll sell the book. I'll never work a day job again. And I'll buy the house in La Jolla.
Right.
But luckily, a guy I used to work with in the golf business called me. I swear it was probably no more than a week after I'd finished this first draft. Which I thought was a book. It was really only the first draft. He called me and said, hey, we got an opening here. For sales for this, it was a sports collectible company, sports licensing company at the time called Photoball. And I said, do you want to come over and interview? I thought, well, you know, I am going to be a famous author, but I don't know if that'll be. I'll get the advance in a month or two months or something. So, yeah, I'll come over. And I worked there for 16 years, I think, until I quit the end of last year to write full time.
Oh, hey, man. That happened to me at a restaurant where I started in the restaurant and they were like, well, after this many years, you'll get these benefits. And after 3 years, you'll get this benefit. After 5 years, you'll get this benefit. And I thought, I'm not even going to listen. I'm not going to be in there. And 17 years later, I finally left that restaurant. So I know that story well. All right. So you had a little hubris, but that's okay. Confidence is good. And, but you were. What's amazing to me is that you were walking around telling people you were a writer, or you weren't writing anything. I can't believe you were able to like keep those things alive in your head, but you did. That is a thing, Matt.
Well, it made. I'll tell you what it did. It made for the guilt I needed to find the character Rick Cahill. So all that bullshit led up to being able to write Rick Cahill because he deals with guilt a lot. And so maybe that's what I was doing, seeding my guilt.
That's right. No, you were. You were researching him without knowing it. You were secretly researching. Hey, well, that's great. So how long did it take you to find an agent and sell Yesterday's Echo once you actually figured out it was done? Like, how long did it take you to finish it? And then how long did it take you to find an agent and a publisher?
Well, like I said, I think I wrote that first draft in 5 or 6 months. And so,
Right.
So I knew something in me, because I am Irish and insecure, told me even though this is going to be a bestseller, maybe you should have it vetted. So I took some writing classes taught at University of San Diego, University of California, San Diego Extension. Took 3 classes by a woman named Carolyn Wheat, who's won some awards as a mystery writer. She actually still leads the writers group I'm in.
Great.
So at that point, I realized after being pretty much the only person in any of the classes who'd written a first draft, when my stuff being on the whiteboard every week getting torn apart by this woman who I hated but learned to love, I realized, well, I got a lot of revision to do, and I probably revised, you know, sent out probably about three or four times of sending out to agents. So it took me, with what the first draft finished, it probably took me 5 or 6 years to get an agent, I would say.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah. 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 Boy, it's a long haul. And how did you deal with it mentally? Were you okay? Was it very up and down for you? Do you have are you like a nose to the grindstone kind of guy, or do you ride the despair dragon sometimes?
Oh, I'm big in this despair, absolutely. I think my career in sales had helped, though, because I was used to rejection to get a lot of it in sales. So, but it was it gets pretty dire. You learn to celebrate the good rejections. You know, you bring in a rejection to your writers group and say, "She's rejecting me, but she likes my work." You know,
yeah,
not the right topic, what have you. So it's very difficult, and you do think at some point it's never going to happen, but you just have to keep working at it. And the good thing that happened is because, you know, as I told you earlier, I told people I was going to be a writer for all this time. That those 5 or 6 months when I actually did write, I wrote every day. At that point in my life, that was the best 6 or 7 months of my life. I was doing something that I really loved, and I realized, well, whatever happens, this is what you have to do because this gives you some joy.
Oh, see, this is the key. I was just talking to a client about this, and I was stressing, like, you can't – there's a lot of results in fiction writing, in writing, from awards to contracts to letters, rejection letters, and blah, blah, blah. But you must – the present moment's where you live, and that's where the pleasure in writing is found, the actual moment of being at the desk. And you must let that be the thing that draws you into the career, not the – house in La Jolla, you know, and it's so critical to remember, because you won all these awards right out of the gate once you finally published it, but still, I imagine the writing itself means more than the Anthony Award. I would think it would anyway.
I'll have to think about that one. That's about a 50-50.
Oh. writing.
I love the act of writing pretty much after I'm done with the act of writing. As I'm doing it, I sometimes hate it. Generally, as I'm reading the book weekly at my writer's group, I think, wow, I don't know how to write anymore. This is garbage. I'm a fake.
Really?
I'm a fraud. I'm that kid who walked around for 30 years telling people he was a writer when he really wasn't. But then after I'm done, I'll read the whole first draft through, and I go, well, you know, it's not that bad. And then I revise and revise. But, I mean, there are days where they're really good, but some days I think, well, I don't know how to do this anymore.
Right. You feel like you've forgotten. That's what happens.
Yeah.
It happens. I will tell you, I wrote a book about that for writers. I'm not recommending it to you, but I do know that when my mind starts drifting to what other people think of my stuff, when I start thinking about my agent or just readers or how someone else would do it, as soon as I start doing that, it's like I've forgotten how to write. I don't know how to do it anymore. And so I feel like the writer has to be so disciplined to keep his or her attention just on the story and not drift even a little bit to, like, I wonder what my writing group will think. As soon as you think that, I believe you're screwed until you bring your attention back. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think what I'll think of it, and I think it sucks. So that's
Why do you think it sucks? Why do you think you look at your stuff and think it sucks, and then you're able to look at it after a draft and say, "Oh, it's not so bad"? What do you think's going on there? Why do you think in the middle of rereading it you think it sucks when it probably doesn't?
I don't know. You're asking me to think. That's difficult, too.
I'm sorry, Matt. That's what we do here on this show.
I did not think I'd have to think on the show. I'm not sure. I think because you don't read it full out until I'm done with it. So
maybe
it takes a while to get a scene done, and maybe you're sick of it by that time. I'm not exactly sure. But I am always surprised when I'm done that, hey, this is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, if it's any
whatever works.
If it's any consolation, Matt, I've interviewed a lot of authors, and I interviewed Alice Hoffman. I love Alice Hoffman. She's a kind of a magical realist, literary kind of novel. She won the Pulitzer, matter of fact. And I liked her book. I'd never heard of her, but I read this book for the interview called The Third Angel. I loved it. just loved it. And I went and interviewed her, and she said, I might have said this in the last interview. Well, I can't keep track. I told this story before. But she said, when I did the interview, she said, I feel like I don't know how to write a book. Every time I start a book, and she's written like 27 or 28 of them, she'll say, I feel like I don't know how to write a book. And always in the middle of every book she's written, she feels like, I don't know if this is going to work out. So I think it's very normal to start, because every book, even though you have the same character, every book is still different, right? Every book has its own puzzle, problems you have to figure out. That makes sense, yeah? Because you're doing something kind of coming at it new.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to that's the thing about a series character is you don't want to write the same book over and over again. That's something I fear. Because my guy has incremental growth in each book. It's not a huge arc for him. It's incremental growth.
Right.
But, it is easy for me to get into the character, but how to still make him interesting and not do the same thing, not have the same reaction to certain things.
Right.
That is a challenge.
Yeah. And if someone, let me ask you this, if you were asked to teach a class in writing a crime series, what is the advice you would give your eager students about keeping that character fresh? What is the thing you have learned? What is that? I don't want to say trick, but what have you learned about how to keep him fresh?
I've learned nothing. Here's really my only concerns when I'm writing a book. I mean, in the back of my mind is this may seem similar, so you need to figure it out. But I just try to think. He's a private investigator. He's had a bit of a dark past. He's carrying some guilt from the death of his wife, which is in the first book. And whether he's responsible for it or not, people can read yesterday's Echo and find out. But so what as a private investigator, I try to find – I put him in a situation. I have an inciting incident, of course. But I want him to be involved in a case where he has emotional connection. And it doesn't always show up right away. But so I have to have him emotionally involved. So then that'll keep him from being able to look at things from a distance while he's right involved in it. Not only does it mean something for his client, but it means something to him, whether the case is solved or whatever happens throughout it. So I try to have him have skin in the game and just keep him under constant pressure. My thought, you want change as much as possible. You want constant pressure. And that's always what I think about when I'm dealing with poor Rick Cahill, who's been beat up pretty much in every book. Emotionally than physically. He's got scars, but the emotional ones you can't see, but they're in there, and that they inform the way he acts. And I do – that is something I'm going to pontificate a little bit. That's something that I had in mind when I first wrote – I thought I wanted to write a series pretty much, but I was just hoping to get a book published because that's what I told people. I told people as a writer. But when I wanted everything – there's Michael Connelly in Bosch. Everyone matters and no one matters. For me, it's every scar matters and no scar matters. If he's both physically and emotionally – so. If he's, if he gets a, let's see, what happened in the, I always think in terms of the physical, I think of Jack Nicholson in Chinatown, where he's got
the ear, the guy, right?
The nose.
Polanski cuts his ear.
Nose. He's got this big old bandage on his face, the whole thing. And
I
just want to always keep that in mind, both, like I said, physically and emotionally. And of course, the physical thing is throughout each book. But the emotional scars, and they carry over. So I wanted a guy who, by the time we get to Lost Tomorrows, he's been beaten down so much and done some things, done some really bad things. But he's he's put his motto, taken from his father before him, who was also a disgraced ex-cop, is sometimes you have to do what's right, even when the law says it's wrong. And by the time he's gotten to Lost Tomorrows, he can no longer – he starts to question his own sense of right and wrong. So I've got him at his emotional nadir for sure in this book. And because that's the only way I could write a series. I couldn't write one where you're watching some cop show where everything gets solved in the first – in 1 hour it's solved. There are no scars for the investigators throughout the season. They just solve each crime as it comes.
Right.
For my guy, there's always a scar that carries.
That's great. And when did you – how long did it take you to figure out that you've got to make sure that he, as you said, I like saying he's got skin in the game, so that it's not just he's not just trying to do a good thing by solving a crime, but he needed an emotional investment. Did you realize that while writing yesterday's Echo, or did you start your next book and realize, oh, you know what I got to make sure I bring in is that his what's his interest in it? How long did it take you to figure that out?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yesterday's Echo, it's kind of a I just gave you the backstory about his dead wife. He was actually right. arrested for this is all before the first book. He was arrested for her murder. Never tried, but never exonerated. In fact, the Santa Barbara police and much of the nation who watched the 48 Hours episode on the murder thinks he's the guy who got away with murder. So
Ooh.
In the first book, he's got that hanging over his head. And then he also meets a woman who needs help in that. So he's not even a private investigator. He's managing a restaurant at the time. By the way, I worked in restaurants for 10 years.
Right. Very good. Very good.
So he's got the first one. It's there. He doesn't have to do anything. He's emotionally involved because he becomes emotionally involved with the woman and needs to help her. So boom, he's in it. So the next
right.
one, you're exactly right. I had to think about if he's going to be a private investigator, how could I make him have to feel involved in the crime beyond or the case beyond just getting a paycheck. And I found a way in for that way into that one in Night Tremors. So yeah, it was in the second book. I'm writing. Oh wait, there's got to be. Oh, I see.
Right.
Now. And it was slowly came together. Where, yeah, that's how it works for me. Because the guy was PI 365 days a year. I'm only going to focus on the one case each year where he's emotionally invested.
Right. Right. There would be a bunch of other. Yeah. I mean, the Chinatown's a good example of that because he's got this one. Starts off with this one little case he's got, which. It's not that it's just a typical, someone's cheating wife kind of thing. And
right.
so that's a kind of a small thing. And so you figure someone like Rick Cahill, probably a lot of those little things popping up in his life, you can just disregard those.
Right. And it's a
right.
little thing, just like in Chinatown, it's a little nothing case. It's going to take a couple of days. And then there's a twist in there that gets them hooked. And that's exactly where I like to write.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's so awesome. Well, all right. Well, listen, congratulations. That, it's such a great story for all our listeners out there, a lot of them who are in their middle years probably, toiling away, writing at night or in the morning before they work, to know what a great example. I know you're a humble guy, but that's what you are anyway, Matt, because a lot of people are living that life. So congrats on this. Finally, you're retired now or from that other work,
yeah,
and now writing's your full-time thing. That's so cool.
Yeah, thanks. I do miss the paycheck, so.
Don't worry. Don't worry. You get enough of those books out there, they're just like a big snowball rolling, and then they'll feed you. Don't you worry. You're going to be fine. Our time is almost up, but before I let you go, first of all, if people want to learn about Matt Coyle and Rick Cahill, is it mattcoyle.com? What's your website, if you have a website?
No, somebody actually already has that. It's MattCoyleBooks.com.
Matt Coyle
and,
Books.
Facebook. I'm Matt Coyle. I just finally started a author page yesterday, I think, or the day before, because I don't want to go into why I didn't do it, but I now have an author page on Facebook, author Matt Coyle. Twitter, I'm on there somewhere. I don't really do anything. I can retweet stuff, but I'm on Instagram a little bit, which is Coyle, mcoyle 044. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, people contact me through my website, and I will definitely talk to anybody.
Excellent. MattCoyleBooks.com. Okay.
I might as well mention it, too, since we talked about it off air, is that I do have a podcast, which is on roughly every other Friday, called Crime Corner with Matt Coyle.
Excellent. And this is answered through Blog Talk Radio also, yeah? Or is it through something else?
Right.
Yeah,
no,
that's right. Okay, folks. Yeah, so if you like listening to people talk about books, you got another option. Okay, but before I let you go, so last question. Finish this sentence. If writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
Keep your ass in the chair.
Keep your ass in the chair. Just do it. Just stay there and it'll work out eventually. That's good advice.
That's
good advice.
That's
all right. That's good. If that's what it taught you, that's what it taught you. Matt, congratulations on book number 6. I hope for the best for you.
Yeah. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Take it easy. Well, yes. Put your butt in the chair. Put your butt in the chair, people. And once you're there, think of the most interesting thing you can think of and write about it. That's what you do. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you so much. And I think I'll be back again tomorrow, next week. Yes, I will. Until then, go find something you love and do it.